Afternoon. Oh my God, we're in year four here. We're going to hit year five soon after August. June 22nd, that was Shades on the Voyager album from Andromeda with Love. Good old Shades. I never saw him without a pair of sunglasses on. That was quite a mixture of a band. One guy went in the Moody Blues, another guy from Kenny Loggins' band, another guy was the homeless guy, which was Shades, the guy singing. Never cared as much for other than living in caves, and I had a guy from Oingo Boingo, John Hernandez, was our drummer, and wow, we called it the Black Sheep Squadron, too. So anyway, welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. My two sidekicks are here. There'll be some more joining us soon. As soon as they get out of the shower or whatever else they're doing, my daughter's back to live with us now. Hopefully she'll stay and not go back to England. And we got Steve Barish on the phone there. How's Steve Barish doing? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here, Fred, having a good time.
Wow.
Having a real good time this week, as a matter of fact.
So how much fun are you? What have you been doing?
Well, I've had a lot of Andromedas in my room for the last few days.
Have you?
Yeah, and don't know why, but they're watching my work, and they've helped me with a couple clients, so it's really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
They're very friendly people.
Yeah, they are. They're big, too.
Very big.
Yeah.
Very big. I remember that picture you showed me in a field with an Andromedan.
Oh, yeah, that's the Andromedan down by the tree.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah, we had quite a... hey, so before the show, we were talking about our mutual friend who we just saw recently, David Carradine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... I was explaining to Steve that Dave and I had been acquaintances for a number of years, many, many years, actually over 10. I remember one time I met him that he was happy. He was always liked to drink a little bit, like a lot, but he was a functioning alcoholic. And I remember one time we were down in San Diego doing a show together. We did a lot of shows together. That's how I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this stuff in his hand that when you opened it, it made a fire.
Wow.
It was the coolest stuff you ever saw. He could open his palm and there'd be flames coming out of it.
That's wild.
Running around showing everybody, you know.
Hmm.
And he was always happy, you know. And then I spent, when did you come out here and do that show? When was that?
We came out, I think, about 3-4 months ago.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun for us.
That was February, March, April, May. February. Was that February or March?
I think so. I think
March,
February.
March something, wasn't it?
It was really a lot of fun, Fred.
Yeah, he was on his, he had his...
I think it was a band called the Cosmic Something or Other.
Yeah, the Cosmic... Oh, man, what's the name of Dave Carradine's band? I have to look it up. But anyhow, he was there, and we were with him, and we were downstairs. No, we were in the back room where he performed. And I was with, what's his name? Tim Guns, who lives back in North Carolina now.
Huh.
Who was, you know, you met Tim Guns, right?
Yes.
He does all these shows. He knows all these celebrities, too. He's from England. He helped start the Whole Life Expo shows originally.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really interesting hanging out with you. I get to meet a lot of nice people.
Meet a lot of crazies.
Oh, yeah.
Like attracts like. So anyway, first, David, he had his favorite cowboy boots on, with black boots with a silver tip. and he had his wife was there. She was wearing our pyramid. She loved our pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she was hanging out at our booth. Remember her, the little black-haired girl, dark-haired girl,
yes,
with reddish hair.
Yes.
That time with freckles on her chest, and she was wearing the pyramid.
Yes.
And real happy. She's kind of short, but she had high heels on.
Oh, was that David Carradine's wife?
Yeah. She was in our booth half the time. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah, you were hanging out with her all day for 2 days.
Well, that's wild.
Yeah, and she was part of our family at the time, you know, and never met his kids. I liked his kung fu. It was old school kung fu, but it was very effective, and he really did do some of it.
Yep.
He sang good. He played good music, and the rest of the band was there. And they were all taking pictures when I first caught up with them Friday night when we were setting up. And then came up to the bar and had a couple of drinks with us and then met Mikkel. He was impressed. He's a big, tall guy, you know.
Yeah, about 6'3", I think.
Yeah, a lot of people think he's short because of the way he looked in Kung Fu.
Yeah.
He was, with those cowboy boots on, he was at least 6'3 or 6'4".
Yeah.
Slim and very good shape. And
yep.
So he hung out with us and then he took off Friday night, and then we saw him again on Saturday. He had a workshop, and then he had to take off and go do that movie in Thailand. I guess he went down to Bangkok, movie. And that's the last I ever saw him. You know, I was planning on doing another show with him next year. I'm really, really going to miss that guy.
Yeah, he was a nice guy.
So much fun.
Yep.
And
all his brothers are in film, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, and I met his dad, you know, when I used to go out.
Oh, John, yes.
I knew John. I met his dad because I was out at, Vandenberg Air Force Base up there in Oxnard back in the 70s and late 60s. You know, late 60s I knew his dad, John. So I used to pick up the base commander who was a two-star or three-star general, and usually on a Friday afternoon. And we'd go down to the Whale's Tail. That's over in Ventura at the Marina in Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't very far away, a 10-minute drive. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way. If you're ever up that way in Oxnard, it's actually in Oxnard, not Ventura, it's in Oxnard.
Yeah, my cousin lives in Oxnard. So.
Yeah, ask him about the Whale's Tail.
Okay.
That's a fabulous restaurant, fabulous seafood. And not only meat anymore, but in those days I ate fish and... So we would go in there, me and the general, and I'd buy him, you know, I mean, the general could drink a lot, but he gave me lots of big orders for the Air Force Base there for launching spaceships and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like millions of dollars worth of orders I would get from that.
Wow.
You know, in orders. They went to the companies I was a rep, but I got 14%, you know, of the commission.
Wow.
It wasn't bad. Wasn't doing bad at all in those days. So anyway,
yeah.
And I had to, you know, of course, pay for everything, but that came out of my commissions. But still, came down a couple hundred grand a year. That ain't bad back in the 60s.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And I was in my 20s then, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd go down to the Whale's Tail, and it's a big, you went up a ramp. You didn't go upstairs. It had a big ramp because it's right. The docks are all the way around it. It's on land, but there's docks around it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom of this ramp, where you go up, was Jane Russell's boat. She had a
really?
Big old boat sitting there. So Carradine, when her would be sitting down there, you know, having toddies, because they both drank pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Carradine, we'd go up there, and the general and I, sometimes we'd sit at the bar, and sometimes we'd sit, you know, at a table next to the bar. Old John Carradine, he'd come up there and sit on the far end, his favorite seat on the far end of the bar, kind of where the servers were, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting there looking out on pretty much a 270-degree view of the marina, gorgeous, having drinks and great food, and he'd be down there telling jokes.
Wow.
That's how I met the Carradine family, through his dad.
That's great.
Yeah, I loved you. He was a cool old guy. Real tall and thin, too, by the way.
Yeah, John Carradine, you're talking. I saw him in a play in Jacksonville, Florida, when I was living down there, oh, God, about 35, 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, I bet he was good. And then
he was great.
Yeah, Jane usually stayed in the boat. She didn't come in too much because everybody recognized her right away.
Mm-hmm.
But she'd come up, and then and they were always there. And John was like I thought he lived there, you know, as much as I saw him there. God bless him, boy, I tell you. I loved his son. And then David, when we had a house out in Winding Way in Malibu, back during when I had my Laguna Beach house, which I still have, but I mean, we had another place that I had a bedroom. It was on Winding Way down in Malibu near Barbara Streisand's place, overlooking the ocean, but on the other side of Coast Highway. And right down on the corner, we had to go down. The street ended at our driveway, like it does here. And you'd have to go down the street, Winding Way, and it made a big left-hand turn, and then it went on down the Coast Highway, down the hill. And right as you made that turn is where David Carradine lived, and his little daughters and sons in those days were little tiny things, and they'd be out in the yard getting all dirty and playing. There'd be a couple dogs. It was kind of a humble residence in a nice area with some land around. It wasn't a real fancy house, and that's where he lived.
Yeah.
So he'd wait, we'd go drive by, and so, I mean, we go back. We go back.
Yeah.
And he was 72, and he was in top shape. I mean, the guy could drink, but he was like, what's his name, that played Patton. He's another big drinker, but he was functioning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he was fully functioning.
Mm-hmm.
But he was always a little nervous. He wasn't a calm person. Mm-hmm. Like when he played Quiet Chang, he played the calm guy, but he wasn't really that calm in real life.
Ah.
He always had to do something. He played the guitar just great.
Did he?
Yeah. So he's going to be a tremendous loss in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, are we going to do a show next year?
I don't know, probably.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I mean, that show, it's not going to be any fun without him, though. He's always been in the shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice guy.
We're going to miss him. And I feel bad for his family, too, because he was pretty tight with all of them.
Well, it said in the paper today that he was the forerunner of the family. He really held the family together.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, while we were there at the New Life or the New Conscious Living Expo, we were at the Hilton Hotel on Century Boulevard for 3 days with him.
Mm-hmm.
His martial arts teacher was there. I met him. I'd seen him before, but this time I actually talked to him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's he seemed like a very sober guy. He wore a suit and a very, very mellow Japanese fellow.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. And that was his martial arts teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And they were excited. I remember this. They were real excited about he had some new show going to start or something big was happening in his life career-wise. I don't know. They were all talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sitting next to us there at the bar. And so really that part of the conversation when he turned over there to talk to his instructor of many years, it was none of my business. So I always tune that conversation out because I don't like to repeat what I hear from the mouth of celebrities.
Sure.
It's not what you do in Hollywood. You keep your mouth shut. You don't try not to listen in.
Right.
But then he took off to do this movie down in Bangkok. And they're not sure if it was murder or it was one of those sexual things that he did.
Yeah.
There's a rumor that his hands were tied behind his back, and that case would be a murder. And
yeah.
And the reason I would think that would happen in Thailand is because he's an Oriental-looking guy. Playing a Japanese master for many years in many, many movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he had any enemies, it would probably be the Chinese or the Japanese.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be an American. Because if he did anything in his practice, it would be offensive to them, like some of these jihadists. You know, they think that we are scourge of the earth. And so they would then therefore be, you know, that's where something could happen to him down there.
Mm-hmm.
Found him in a closet, actually. So I don't know the whole details. I'll get more on.
I think they were going to do a coroner report today on him. So.
Yeah, it hasn't gotten in the news yet that much. But he did over 100 movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he knew about the nuclear receptor, too.
He did know about it.
Oh, yeah.
His
wife... You saw her wearing our pyramids.
Yes.
You couldn't get her out of the booth. They were into our stuff. Big time.
Your stuff is really good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Really good stuff. As a matter of fact, I wore my...
We put a pond in out here, a little lake, and we got it about two-thirds full, and we had to dig through some rocks, you know, it's a big pile of rocks in one corner of the pond as part of the dam that goes across the back.
Right.
So it started leaking yesterday while we were filling it, and we sort of, the neighbor, his field is next to ours, and we're all on a hill, so it kind of made a little new creek for him. We created a new creek.
Yeah.
For our neighbor, so we got to fill that in next week. And of course, half the water in our pond went out, so we got to repair it. Just getting that pond full enough where I could take one of my radio-controlled sailboats out there.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah. Book, I mean, it's basically, you can't say it's completely finished, but it's pretty much done, if you know what I mean. We're starting editing next week. The final writing will probably occur next week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, basically, just all I'm doing is topping off chapters now. All the chapters are pretty much written, and we're just topping them off.
Cool.
So we should be taking orders as soon as we get the book edited, which will take about 2 weeks, which will put us in the middle of June.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to have a size estimate of the size of the book and a cost estimate of the book and be taking orders by the 1st of July.
Well, I'd like to have the first copy.
Yeah, I'll get you one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to do 500 special editions unabridged, which has all the stuff in it, because when it gets to the publisher, they're going to whack it some. They always do.
Yeah.
They're done now.
Yeah.
And so the publisher gets done with it, it'll be probably 20% smaller, you know. But
right.
And it'll still excellent, but they always do that, because I write books too big. I mean, you saw the Rays of Truth?
Yes, yes.
That was edited down probably 10% at least.
Wow.
And it's still 505 pages or something.
Yeah. It's a great book.
Those of you that have, we've got so many viewers out there, we got a huge television audience. This is the book we're talking about, the old one, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light. And we sell these every day, have been since 1999. I don't know.
It's a great book. It's a fabulous book.
Thousands of these puppies. And it's got all the drawings in the new book. Here's all the drawings. There's a picture of the Aurora spaceship right there, as I saw it with a moon behind it.
Right.
I'm showing them pictures on the TV here. That's a side view of it right there. I've actually seen that. 600-foot long space liner, I call it. And it's got all the diagrams in here. It's got time travel. There's a reverse engineering. A friend of mine flew that. He had to wear a special G suit. That's 33 G's sideways, 33 times your own weight.
Wow.
And the guy that did this drawing, his name is Bob McClandish, and he did the same drawing for the military.
Mm-hmm.
I had to license it through him because the military has a copy of it too, but the bottom line was they couldn't get... You know, it's a government printing office, and they can't hold patents on them. There's some of the propulsion system. Outline on them. That's called a flux liner. Those are F-16 seats in there, by the way, at the top, right up there. I'm just showing people on TV what it is.
Right.
And then I've got a Pleiadian spaceship engine in here, too, somewhere. You got the book. You know what? You read that book, haven't you?
Yes. It's a fabulous book, Fred.
Yeah.
Absolutely fabulous. I've got two copies here.
Oh, good.
And I massage some people here, and they know about your books, and they've ordered nuclear receptors from you. I'll tell you what's going on, to be honest with you. The projector that I'm wearing is becoming even more potent.
That was pretty bad, pretty wild last week.
It was wild, but now it's becoming even more potent. I'm breathing much deeper, which means I'm taking in a lot more energy. So it has partially to do with that, but it has a lot to do with prayer. But the necklace itself is very, very potent. It's almost 50% more potent than it was last week, and I don't understand it, but it's very, very powerful. Something's happening extremely powerful. Extremely.
I believe one more thing here, and then I was totally focused on what we're talking about. There's a drawing of a Pleiadian ship engine.
Right.
I'm just showing everybody the diagrams, and there's a Pleiadian ship next to it. There, I'll put that away, and that's the front cover. You can order it through Amazon, or you can order it through us for half the price. So anyway, the projectors, we've been selling a lot of receptors lately.
You have, good.
Yeah, and good. Business is way off. I mean, I wouldn't lie about that. Business is off 40%.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we make enough sales to break even every month. And if you're breaking even right now in these times, you're successful.
Yeah, you're doing good.
You got all the bills get paid, barely. But we got a lot of bills.
Mm-hmm.
It costs a lot of money to make all this stuff. But
sure.
When the book comes out, that'll be like an injection of a new product. I'd like to turn around. I've got 3 or 4 new products I want to develop, which I could develop pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Get them
mm-hmm.
on the market, but I haven't had the time because I'm writing the book. The book, when I get up in the morning, I start writing probably around 10 and quit around 3 in the afternoon. Then I have my
mm-hmm.
normal
mm-hmm.
household chores.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter is over here. She's supposed to be on the show with me tonight, but I don't know where she went. She's wandering around somewhere. So that's how it goes out here. And then we have our excitement, like the pond bursting yesterday, and we've been about 10,000 gallons of water. That's high. Probably lost about 30,000 gallons of water. It's a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And because it holds about 90,000, and we'll probably fill it back. I'm not going to fill it up but more than half when I fix it. I don't
mm-hmm.
need that much water.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So anyhow, what have you been doing all week?
Well, I've been doing a lot of meridian work. My master about 25 years ago showed me a way of opening up all the meridians in about 3 minutes. And so I've been doing that with, I would say, maybe about 20 to 23 clients this week.
Wow.
And it really makes a big difference. It's very, very clearing. And I know your daughter's into that stuff, so when I come out there, I'm going to show her some of these techniques I have.
Oh, yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah, because she's pretty smart about that stuff, and I think it would help her a lot.
Yeah.
But there is a way of opening up all the meridians in 3 minutes instead of taking an hour.
Oh, good.
So it's a lot of fun, and it centers you, grounds you, and your mind is very clear when it's done. So, and it lasts for a few days.
Oh, yeah. So I know you worked out me. You're pretty strong. I know that.
Well, thank you.
You get pretty strong doing that all the time, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, your hands get very strong, and you become very focused. You know, you just you do what you got to do.
I agree.
You know, and that's the only way to do it. And I've done over 15,000 massages in 16 years.
That's quite a few.
Yeah, and you know, every one of them is energy work also. So you know, you learn a lot after all those years. You know, and it's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun working on people. I love working on people.
Yeah, that's excellent.
You know, and your products help me. Your products really help me. I'll tell you one thing. Nobody can grab this master crystal from me. I wouldn't sell that for $1 million. Somebody walked up to me and asked me $1 million for that crystal, I wouldn't sell it.
Oh, yeah. We sold another one. I'm about to sell one of the big ones. I got a client that's real interested in one of my big ones.
Really?
I've only got 2 big ones left. You know, and then I'm going to be... I've got some other ones in storage up at Malibu, up by David Carradine's house, of all places, or I almost
mm-hmm.
right next door to where he lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to go get them at some point, but... tell that sell a few more what I have, then I won't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the amazing part of it is when you put on that show at Laguna Beach, I mean, I never saw so many beautiful crystals in my life, and the show was just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely amazing. I don't know how many crystals you had, but I know there were way over 500 crystals in that room.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. I mean, they were all sizes. You know, it was just all kinds of sizes, small ones, big ones. They were all over the place, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah,
really,
I mean,
really
you know,
fantastic.
Crystals are so important, and people, you know what's going to happen is we're going to completely run out of them, and everybody's going to want one.
Well, they're really, really beautiful. I'll tell you, those master crystals, I'm just amazed at what they can do.
Yeah.
I'm really amazed. I mean, they have a mind all of their own.
Yeah, they do.
You know, they're very, very powerful, and they really work. You know, I see shards of light coming off my master crystal and going into the different chakras and different points in the body. I'm just amazed.
Yeah, you know, where do you get your portum at?
I can't wait for that.
Now, what you might want to do is put your, you might want to put your master crystal inside your portamid with you.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Well, my portamid goes over my bed.
Yeah, but you can also put your master crystal in there.
Okay, that'll be a lot of fun. I don't know how I'm going to move it around. It weighs about 80 pounds. It's really heavy.
Is it that big?
Oh, yeah. I got a big one from you.
Yeah, I forgot what size you got, you know?
It's pretty nice size.
That's
I mean, it's
amazing.
Hard for me to pick it up and move it around. It's pretty big. And I love it. I'm telling you, I have people that can feel that crystal under the table.
Yeah.
You know, they actually feel it, and one of my clients actually gets warm, gets heated up.
Yeah, that's because their circulation improved.
Yeah.
They definitely will do that for you, you know?
You know, I don't think people realize the amount of work that these crystals can really do and how much love they put out. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, you got to realize that everybody has. I was writing about this. I think today or yesterday about some of the scientists I was working on, Enrico Fermi and Leo Szilard and John Wheeler, all Nobel Peace Prize winners, and what their work was all about.
Mm.
And Leo Szilard, he's the guy that back at the Stagg Field in 1941? Yeah, December 2nd. 1941,
mm-hmm.
Created the first nuclear reaction in the badminton court, you know, under the bleachers at the Stagg Field in Chicago.
Mm.
Yeah, he got a Nobel Peace Prize earlier for nuclear fission, along with Enrico Fermi, his partner, and John Wheeler was involved, and four or five other guys, you know, were all involved together.
Yeah.
And
wow.
then after they, he didn't want the bomb to be dropped. You know, he was part of the Manhattan Project.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he was out there at Los Alamos with everybody else, along with Richard Feynman. And he did not want the bomb dropped. So he was picketing and bugging President Truman,
mm-hmm.
along with Albert Einstein. They were all a group, but the bomb still went off.
Yes, it did.
So then, yeah, check this out. So then... and you know how he got into that?
How?
H.G. Wells, when he was a kid, H.G. Wells wrote a book called The Other World or something, back in 1911 or 12.
Mm.
And he read that book, I think, in 14 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was born in 1901.
Mm-hmm.
And he read that book on September, or August 8th. He was a Leo. Was it Fermi? That same birthday is up a year apart, September 8th.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, read the book, and in the book, H.G. Wells had predicted and written about an atomic fissionable bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference was the way H.G. Wells portrayed an atomic weapon was that when it went off, it had more power, about as much power as a lot of dynamite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I always measure it in kilotons of dynamite,
mm-hmm.
or TNT. And in the book, instead of making this giant explosion, it made a continual explosion. It completely kept exploding for several hours, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what got that inspired, you know, Leo Szilard to build an atomic bomb.
That's
an amazing H.G. Wells.
Mm.
And he said if he hadn't read that book, probably never would have thought about fission. Because once he got out of the Manhattan Project, he went to his real career. He started off to become a physician in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into molecular biology.
Wow.
And started working with dolphins.
Wow.
And he wrote a book about them.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, what's really interesting is that they really tried to stop dropping that bomb because they dropped two of them.
Yeah,
and,
the
they really didn't
the
want them dropped at all.
There was the little, what was the name of those bombs? The big boy, little big boy, and
fat boy, and
fat boy, yeah, and what was the other one?
I forget the other one. One went to Nagasaki, and the other went to
Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Now, because remember, at the University of Michigan, we were doing analysis on the radiation that those people got from that bomb, and that's when we found out that people that were exposed to large amounts of radiation had no side effects, where other people had small exposure, had very massive side effects, and that's when we found out that you need to have trace minerals in your body, which are electrolytes, and that was how we created the pyridine pyrrolo formula that we sell every day, made out of trace minerals. Because what happens with radiation like that, and that's called ionizing radiation, because it's beta particles, alpha particles, it produces free radicals in the body, which drives the pH in the acid range, and that's how people ended up getting cancer. So by using the trace minerals that we created in those formulas, which we were introduced to them by the Paiute Indians back in 1929, they introduced them to our society. And by using those trace minerals, we were able to get rid of cancer, you know, get rid of it, or prevent it altogether. If you take enough of them, you'll never get cancer. I don't care how much radiation you get, unless you get a huge amount that overcomes the electrolytes, and that would be a major amount. I remember back in those days, they didn't know how. I mean, I remember when I worked, one guy I wrote about was Ernest Orlando Lawrence, E.O. Lawrence, who built the first cyclotron in the United States. And then he went over to, got a Nobel Peace Prize for it over at University of California at Berkeley. And when I worked with his equipment at the University of Michigan, we had huge amounts of, we had big water tanks, like 10 feet tall and 50 feet long and 3 feet thick, to protect us from the radiation when that equipment was turned on. You get a lot of artificial radiation there, electromagnetic especially. So, and that was ionizing radiation. So I was working with radiation. That's how I got into U of M studies, because the medical lab was right next door. We were in a separate building, but when you walked out of the building, you walked around the south part of the building, and there was like a big square area where people would sit in a little park.
Yep.
Across that park, I think it was called a triangle, if I remember correctly. You go out through the park, and as you went through the park, it's like a square, you went out through the corner. So when I would come in the morning, I would park my bike down there, my bicycle down there in the corner, and I'd go one of two directions. I could go in the building on the right-hand corner facing south, or facing actually east, and I'd be in the Navy lab where we had all the, we did this experimentation with the hulls of ships. We had a big, long, like a moat, you know, about 10 feet wide and 100 feet long. And there was a big trolley above it, and so on a track. So what they would do is they would put these model ships, you know, like a model 1 inch to the foot. And so if you had a model of a aircraft carrier in there, they just did the outside part of the hull. They didn't do the deck or anything. So it was big enough to become a canoe when they got done with it. So I used to take them home. It'd be 10 or 15 feet long.
Wow.
Yeah, and what they do is they'd hook an instrument to it that measured resistance, and then they would drag that ship through the water, that hull, through this water, you know, through this long canal that they had, and they'd monitor the amount of wave resistance that the hull exhibited, determine what hull was low resistance to water and would pass through with less horsepower, or what hull was highly resistant. That's how they develop the bottoms of ships. That's the most important part in a ship development, is the hull resistance.
I would have never known that.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. And then next to that, across the other way, you go into the wind tunnel lab, and then past that, on the way down to the door where you went out to the Randolph Lab building, was the medical lab, where all the doctor's students were. And so that's where I tuned into all this medical research on radiation, and of course, you know, they always had their corpses in there for autopsies, the cadavers.
Mm.
And so here I am, a 14-year-old kid, playing around with time travel in a Randolph lab and seeing literally hundreds of cadavers in various forms of research where they're taking them apart and experimenting.
Right.
So, I mean, not too many kids at 14 saw this, pretty much everything that went on in the world, you know?
Yeah.
I got to see it all.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was totally amazing.
Yeah.
And it was just the way of life, you know? So
yeah.
I remember a couple of times in school, a couple of kids I knew committed suicide. In those days, kids used to hang themselves.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So I'd be there, you know, to help cut them off the rope or however they did it. And seeing a person that's no longer in their body wasn't such a scary thing for me because of the, you know, environmental exposure I was pretty much subjected to every day anyway.
Yeah.
I could see where, as a doctor, you know, MD, I'm a homeopath, working on bodies isn't so scary, doing operations and stuff, once you've done it enough times. It sounds a little gory, you know, from the outside, but when you do it every day, it gets to be, okay, this is like working on a truck or something, you know, these are nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
This is what you do.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I know I do a lot of work on people, and for me to look at the chakras and see how beautiful they really are, and how it's just so wonderful to know that that we're made in God's image, and it's just absolutely gorgeous the way that the energy, the oxygen, goes in through the chakras. Because I can I go about 4 feet above the body, and I actually look at the oxygen going through the chakras. And it's like a blue-yellow light. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And
blue light goes into the heart, and the yellow goes into the solar plexus.
Yep. And it's just really, really beautiful. And it's amazing that the body is so unique. I mean, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And then if you look at the wheels on the chakras, which are etheric generators, they actually turn.
Yes, they do, Fred.
Yeah,
yes,
clockwise,
they do.
Counterclockwise, clockwise,
yep.
Counterclockwise.
Yep. There's a ring around the chakra that actually moves.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing. I see them in my hands all the time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's amazing how the chakras really work.
And you can look at people that have demented personalities, and you'll see that their chakras are reversed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In other words, they're not going clockwise, counterclockwise,
going counterclockwise
like gears,
yes,
opposing each other. They're actually meshing against into each other.
Yeah.
And people that have personality, especially greedy people, people that are greedy have real heart problems and throat problems, and typically generate cancer pretty quickly into themselves because their body goes into pure acid.
Yeah.
It's a hydrogen atom.
I know that when I first was taught about chakras from my master, I could actually raise and lower the chakra levels. And he told me to leave them alone for a while until I really knew what I was doing.
Well, yeah, because it throws off the master balance, which is the Kundalini force.
Yeah. And then later on when I was working, there is a governor over the chakras. And I got to learn how to use that. So that was a lot of fun to learn.
Yeah.
But, it's really, the body's an amazing tool.
Yeah, the governor part is interesting because if you break it, your blood pressure goes through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Feel yourself
quick. There's the governor is above, the one I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the one over the head. I'm talking about the one over the tummy area.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's the one you talk about. And you can actually raise the levels and clear them very quickly with the governor level. I've never told anybody where it is, you know, so they would mess around with it. But you can really create tremendous power with those, and eventually it'll go back into homeostasis.
Yeah.
But it's fun to do that with people because sometimes they want to be cleared a little bit more, and you got to be careful with it. You have to really listen to what the body is saying when you're touching the chakras and when you're touching the governor.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's a lot of fun. You know, you and I think are the only ones that I know of that have ever been able to see the governors.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else I've ever talked to really knows where the governors are. That's amazing.
Yeah, when you study physics like I have since the day I took a first breath here,
mm-hmm.
and now that I'm studying for the book purposes, every aspect of science that makes anything to do with today's science,
right?
Anything going back 500 years before Christ with Thales, where the book starts,
mm-hmm.
It was very important to bring each invention up and the inventor and the story of his life in, you know, two or three paragraphs,
mm-hmm.
and his mom and dad and his kids sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And well, everybody will get to know the human side of science. That's the one-third of the whole book, is to get people to understand the human side of science. And when you start to understand the human side of science, you'll realize that every one of these guys, every single one of them, was, and a lot of them, you know, like Leo Szilard, they were metaphysical. I mean, there was several of the top big names were so occult metaphysical,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't tell anybody. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The only ones that really exposed that were Charles Ledbetter and Annie Besant at the turn of the century, because
right.
they could do micro psi readings on atomic structure,
mm-hmm.
which was verified by the time Niels Bohr came along and Ernest Rutherford.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so who won Nobel Peace Prizes for their work? And I'm sure Besant and Ledbetter would have had there been a Nobel Peace Prize back when they did their work, was in the 1800s.
Yeah, yeah.
The Nobel Peace Prize didn't start till the 1900s. But it was really amazing because they knew, you know, and we talk about oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon as being the four elements.
Mm-hmm.
All the work in nuclear physics is based on the hydrogen atom, pretty much. You know, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Fusion, you know, helium, mm-hmm. Hydrogen atoms into helium plus energy.
Right.
Fission, we're looking at slow neutrons into heavy masses, which there is a helium and hydrogen component in the far end of the fission reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness itself, in quantum, everybody, you know, the whole quantum theory shell arrangement was based on studies of hydrogen because it was the simplest element with the atomic number of one.
Yes.
And so it was all about consciousness. We start looking at the spooky action of the distance, the instantaneousness of quantum tunneling that we get with the projectors and the instantaneousness of events and telepathy. A lot of these scientists did a lot of work in telepathy and all
mm-hmm.
of that. They
mm-hmm.
just didn't broadcast it in the outer circles, but on the inner circles, they were very deep in this stuff.
Mm.
Into what
I never
into.
Knew that, Fred.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like Leo Szilard, who's you know, credited with starting the first fission reaction. Enrico Fermi gets some credit, but he didn't even believe in it until he started working. They were both from Hungary. I mean, no, Fermi was from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guy that was working with him, Frank Wilson, I think his name was, they were both from Hungary. They were the guys that, Budapest, to be exact, they were the guys that were the shakers and the movers, and, you know, these Hungarian scientists were very metaphysical. Look at Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, you know, next to Thomas Alva Edison. Edison was a tinkerer, didn't even have a formal education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look at the difference in the, you know, basically Tesla eclipsed Edison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually Edison
yep.
was a good practical man. He did get a light bulb to work in a vacuum, which was, you know.
Right.
After after destroying 2,000 tries.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm sure Tesla could have done it with 3 or 4 tries.
Mm-hmm.
So, Edison took a long time to get something done.
Yeah. Tesla was a very, very intelligent man. Very, very intelligent. I think he knew more about metaphysical than a lot of people even give him credit for.
Well, when you understand Earth resonance generators, like he did, ERGs, he knew how to play around with the ELF frequencies of the Earth.
That's amazing.
And when, in my book, in the other section,
mm-hmm.
where I talk about, and we've talked about this on previous shows, you can go into the archives, in previous shows we talked about the Earth resonant generators and how they affect the human body and how they're transmitted in a negative way,
mm-hmm.
because the frequencies are not, right on. If you ring a bell in a certain ring, it's comfortable. But as
mm-hmm.
if you have an old bell and it's rusty and it maybe got a couple cracks in it,
mm-hmm.
you try to ring that, it has a dull thud to it. It's not very harmonious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's still a bell and it still rings in a frequency range. But
that's
the way ELF is in the body. And so what they do is they throw this negative ELF at you so that you feel really weird. Then you go down to your local doctor and get a bunch of prescription drugs which cover up the effect and
mm-hmm.
eventually cause you to either kill yourself or yourself and your neighbor or somebody,
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So it's quite interesting.
There's a lot going on.
Oh, yeah.
A lot going on. I know that the energy work that I'm starting to do is more powerful because of the projector.
Yeah.
The projector that I'm wearing. And I don't understand the difference between the gold and the platinum. All I know is that the platinum is becoming more powerful as I'm wearing it. And the gold necklace was very powerful. But the platinum is like it's just off the charts.
Well, when you get into the projector energy, not the receptor,
mm-hmm.
you're dealing with antiparticles in the human DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And human DNA, of course, is made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon. And then that's added, multiplied a little bit, the 4 basic amino acids,
mm-hmm.
quinine, cytosine, tyrosine, and adenine. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
You've got your 4 amino acids spiraling up to 36 base pairs when you're first born.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, 46 base pairs, and then when you take your first breath, it's down to about 32 or so. So when you get this tremendous drop, you're losing a lot of antimatter, and you're losing a lot of dark energy. And science is just now, where I'm writing about that too a little bit. I don't want to go too far out with dark energy because people won't understand it, but
mm-hmm.
I don't even understand it completely. But basically, when you start dealing with dark energy, you're dealing with probability.
Mm-hmm.
And when you mm-hmm. use your mind and a tool like the projector consciously to move into probability, you're harnessing dark matter. Remember, the universe is probably about 72-73% dark matter.
Yes, yes.
So this gives you the advantage over the average person. Let's, for example, if you use like in one of our irradiator systems,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's scalar wave, which is working with positive energy, it's a fifth-dimensional energy and a fourth-dimensional energy. Okay, it's both.
Mm-hmm.
But it relies on moon cycles and it relies on planetary motion to deliver the most punch to get things to happen.
Yes.
When you're working with that kind of technology, you write something on a piece of paper, you put that piece of paper inside the irradiator, the megorb, and you don't tell anybody what you wrote on it. Because even if you and I were working on a joint project,
mm-hmm.
I have my way of sharing something
mm-hmm.
about what we want, and you have your way. I would never tell you, and you would never tell me, because if we told each other, it would negate
yes.
the effect. And then if we told somebody else, it would probably crucify the effect.
Right, right.
Because
right.
of what's called the interference pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and that
that is where in quantum, when you generate an interference pattern, you're making a measurement. So you now know what the quantum state is because you put light on dark matter. See what I'm saying? It's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yeah.
But with a projector, when you use it, you don't tell anybody about it. You don't have to worry whether it's a full moon or a new moon for programming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just do it. You don't need two other people working on the same idea as you.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is do it yourself with clarity, and you can have an infinite number of people because they all become quantumly entangled with your idea, and they don't even know it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's better that they don't know it, because if they find out, then what happens before the result? If they find out after the result, that's verification, and that quantum measurement or desire or aspiration is fulfilled, then it's okay. That gives it, that's an acknowledgement of the process. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's what the projectors do over the other stuff.
Yeah.
You don't
I know.
Need anybody else working with it. You do your own thing and it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I know
all you got to do is believe.
Yeah, it's that's the big word.
Yeah.
That's the big word. Because there is as much knowledge in darkness as there is in light.
Yeah.
And people are afraid of it because of movies or because of what people say. But there is just as much love in the dark as there is in the light.
That's right.
And I think it's very important for people to realize, and I talk about that on my radio program.
Well, tomorrow you can talk about it because we're out of time.
Oh, we're out of time. Okay.
6:58.
Wow, where does the time go?
Okay, give your phone number out real quick.
Yeah, it's area code 585-746-8321.
And those of you, I know we're always getting a lot of new listeners over on Ustream and Watchers. I am Fred Bell at Pyradyne.com, PYRADYNE.com, and I am also located at, our phone number is 1-800-729-2603. And you've been listening to my show, the Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, co-hosted with Steve Barish. Bella Bird and Buddy Bird didn't show up tonight. He was out on the town. Tomorrow night's the CAN show at 9 o'clock. See you next Friday night. Thank you for making this a good show.